As an early stage startup, you are likelier to die than to survive.
Founders want to optimize for that big launch day.
You don't have resources. Prove with a microscopic version that in principle, it works.
Go to market comes down to three things. It's who are your customers? What pain points are you trying to solve?
Don't project your excitement on the product. Go and get evidence that people will use it.
You have the bigger vision. Finding that real narrow
niche
is so key.
Welcome to The Startup Leap, the number one podcast interviewing startup founders who have taken the leap.
On The Startup Leap, we hear real, raw, and relatable stories of how they've navigated taking the leap. We're your hosts.
I'm Yvonne.
And I'm Maria.
And this is the Startup Leap podcast.
Any statements made by Maria, Yvonne, or the Startup Leap guests are solely their view and are not advice.
So we've done one of these deep dives, the first one on team, and this one is on go-to-market. For those who haven't had the chance to look at the team episode, you should check that. What we do with this episode is pretty much just deep dive into a particular theme, and this one will be on go-to-market. So I have thoughts because I love go-to-market. But
I know you do. When I think about go-to-market, it comes down to three things, right? It's who are your customers? What pain points are you really trying to solve? And then what are your channels? Go-to-market touches every single aspect of your business.
Yeah.
Your sales strategy to product engineering. Yeah. And hearing about it from all the guests that we've had it from different perspectives, from different sectors as well. One of the things that is super interesting is in this space is some of the resources that are out there, like the mum test, for example.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it comes back to spending time with customers.
Go-to-market is where you bring your idea to the pressure of reality.
Yeah.
And reality tests it. You realize and decide how you will iterate, experiment, to finding what the market wants. Because at the earliest stages, there are three risks, right? Like either that you're building something people don't want and you've built it and you're projecting on the customer and they don't want, or you're building something that people will not pay for.
Yeah.
They will use it, but there's no way to monetize it. Or you're building something that people will pay for, but they just won't pay enough for you to be able to build a massive business. You will find out on go-to-market if that's true or not. Go-to-market is the place where shit gets real.
Yeah.
And we decide whether or not this is something that actually works. It's the part that is so unsexy. It is the part where you have to get your hands dirty.
You'll never see that money in the bank.
Literally. And you will never get that product or service into the world in a way that actually fits. Another thing about our episodes is the fact that people have different business models.
Yes.
And go to market for different business models can differ. If you're a consumer company, it's different.
One example of the episode we did on Vendees, right? We talk about the software. Sometimes you are the software.
Especially at the earliest stages.
Exactly.
People say, look, we had to be the back end one, just
on
the Excel sheet and to customer. The customer's like, oh, that worked.
Perfect example. He shared how they were using Excel spreadsheets. They were doing everything manually before they even built a line of code.
Remember, they actually built a whole product before they rolled out.
And then he realized,
that he had built something that the market didn't want.
Sometimes just be really scrappy. Just figure out what is it that you can deliver to customers that you don't have to go out and build this full-blown product, because we've seen it a lot where
people just overthink.
Go spend a lot of money on like products and then realize
the customers don't want it.
It
doesn't work for them. I'm a strong believer of delaying building a product as much as possible.
100%.
Even as an investor, there's this common saying of second-time founders think of distribution and first-time founders think of product.
Yeah.
Because there's the danger of romanticizing the product. The extent to which your product is valuable is to the extent that customers use it. You can create a very scrappy product that customers will use. And a product doesn't even have to be a product in the traditional sense of a word. It's a set of processes that are automated that gets stuff done. On Vendees, with not obsessing over the product and anchoring on distribution, I would even say the best case scenario is that you co-design with the customer.
Exactly. Another example in being the software in the early days is Robin AI. And I think a slightly different nuance there in that they were building AI models, right? And sometimes in those early stages, there is going to be a lot of hallucination and noise.
Yeah.
So you need to actually go in and have a human in the loop to ensure that the output
is correct. Yeah.
Before you actually go out and build this like fully automated product.
Yeah. And there are lots of AI tools out there now. Founders are leveraging AI. When I think about Robin's episode on the go-to-market piece, two things I find interesting. Richard didn't have a technical co-founder.
Mm.
So he had to go find a technical co-founder. After he found the technical co-founder, he actually didn't build a product.
Yeah.
He literally went to lawyers and said, we are building this product. Is this something you would use? And they said, yes. And then he co-built with them.
That is marketing before you have a product.
Yep.
And not marketing in the sense of building public.
Yeah.
That's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
The fact that you're going out, speaking to these individuals who are the customers that would potentially use your product, understanding what is it that they need and building with them.
And working with evidence. Like, exactly. Don't project your excitement on exactly. what you think people will do to the product. Go out and actually get evidence that people will use it. Will people use this thing? And I think on this point as well, people say different things to what they mean sometimes. Mm. So oftentimes when I see really comprehensive surveys as a way of market validation, I'm like, no, because customers don't always say what they mean. Yeah. They also don't always know what they want enough for them to be able to communicate it to you.
That's why The Mum Test is definitely one of the books I'll definitely recommend in this space, because it comes down to getting the truth from customers.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I will tell you as a customer what I think I want.
Yeah.
Really, when I use it, maybe not.
And just look at their actions. I feel like a very good litmus test is look at what they do, not just what they say. Oh, it's going to be incredible. Would you use it? Of course. Okay, here's the beta test for you to download it. Would you give us feedback? Or would you pay for it? How much would you pay for it? Especially being an early stage startup that is limited in funding, that is limited in time. My thesis is that with go-to-market, as an early stage startup, you are likelier to die than to survive. So you are statistically dead. Knowing that, you need to iterate very quickly to a market pulse, to something in the market that captures a customer's intent to continuously use and buy. That's harder to do than people think, because there are many startups who have great customer pull and still eventually die. Because it's not just about will customers use it. You are building a business ultimately.
If we think back to Sabrina's episode, she shared the importance of having her customers pay from early. I think this is a mistake that a lot of companies make. They're like, we just want to get it over the line.
Yeah.
We know that if we don't charge, they'll be able to sign up more quickly. But actually, then when it comes to the point of paying, it becomes a real issue.
I would say there's a balance there, though. You definitely don't want to create artificial barriers that stop them from doing pilots. But you definitely want to start framing those commercialization conversations early on. We've got a small favor to ask. If you're enjoying the podcast, hit that subscribe button.
Yep, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else, subscribing and following us is the easiest way that you never miss an episode.
And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, subscribe.thestartupleap.io, to get exclusive updates straight into your inbox. Now back to the episode.
There's ways in which you can do it. You could, for example, say you get to use our product for premium for the next two months. If you find it valuable, in 2 months, this is what price is going to look like.
Yeah.
And we can continue to discuss this until you get to that point in time. But I think you do need to have the conversation up front, because in doing that, you also show the value that your product is bringing to them.
Yeah. The other thing, more from a consumer product perspective, Ed, who was the founder of Stash, had built a wealth management app in the US, the unicorn. He talked about the fact that they were a regulated product.
Yeah.
As a wealth management company, they had to partner with brokers early on. So how can you very quickly and cheaply validate the thesis that people will use what you're building? I think there's an element of speed, statistically dead.
Yeah.
So you have to do it quickly and also cheaply. How can I quickly and cheaply validate them? Partnering with brokers as opposed to getting their license directly would make it like faster for them to get to market. The other thing that I thought was interesting was he said something about he went to a Starbucks queue and he just took, I think it was $5 or $10. He was like, if you use the app, I'll give you this, like the money. Yeah. That's like literally customer acquisition costs in cash. People did many things that didn't scale. For example, Michelle of Peanut literally went on like parent boards.
And the rave stickers as well.
Exactly. Like people did crazy things at the beginning.
One was where we had the bitcoins in the church.
Yes, Elizabeth's episode of As a Finance, she got a Bitcoin ATM in a church. Are those words you would have put together in any way? A Bitcoin ATM in a church. The part of that doing things that don't scale, that people don't talk about, is the fact that you need to do things that don't scale to figure out how to productize them in a way that scales.
Another one that comes to mind is Rafi's episode, because obviously as a marketplace, you really require that heroic effort to build both sides. Yeah. The marketplace. His perspective of going narrow initially,
yeah,
of just focusing on marketing, yeah, as an area to really build out both sides of, yeah, that marketplace. And we see it across a lot of startups, right? So if you think about going narrow, even if you think back to the case of Airbnb,
yeah,
initially they
have to find a clean wedge into, yeah, the market.
Initially they were just like in New York,
yeah,
going door to door, helping people do their listings. Again, come back to your point around doing things that don't, yeah, scale. So many examples of companies that have done that in initial phase. Like, you have the bigger vision of who you want this to address, yeah, but just, yeah, finding that real narrow
niche
initially is so key.
I think some founders are afraid of the fact that it might minimize the vision. Mm. It doesn't. You don't have time. No. You don't have resources. You need to prove with a microscopic version of your, exactly, vision that in principle it works. Then it makes it less harder to draw a line, exactly, to the eventual vision. I really think that wedge point is one to labor, because many times, even as investors, we see founders who are taking very spread out approaches to the market that is going to overwhelm in a way that you might not even get the insights on your initial pilots. More broadly speaking, most of our guests knew their ICP and the USP, and they communicated it clearly. Tim mentioned a lot about understanding the customers and figuring out what, yeah, they want. Ed really was just, keep it simple. Mm-hmm. I think he said, invest in as little as $5. Exactly. I remember that statement. And it being simple is hard. People think because it's simple, it's easy. It's actually very hard, because you need to refine, yeah, refine in a way that when you're talking to your ICP, they get you.
And it resonates.
And it resonates immediately, yeah, because they're going to be, there's going to be a lot of noise. So that narrow positioning really helps the messaging, really helps the clarity. And a bit more technical point is, you definitely want your ICP to be scalable. Because,
yeah,
I see this with founders where you've targeted an ICP that doesn't scale. Mm. And you've gotten insights, but you can't transfer those insights to adjacent markets. Because remember, you're doing things that don't scale, yeah, so that you can actually productize them
and
scale them. Yeah. But you need to have the open mind, yeah, of not thinking about scale initially, so that you don't dilute the insights.
Yeah. I think another one that comes to mind is the episode that we did with Jasmine on Luna.
Yeah.
And effectively, she was creating a category.
Yeah, teen tech.
And for her, like, figuring out what works, how to reach the end customer, because she's got parents that are paying for the, yeah, app, but then the teenagers, yeah, who are using it, right? Yeah. And I just thought,
That's a good point, where the user is not,
exactly,
the buyer.
Where we had the Go Henry episode, yeah, with Louise, and how she had to go into schools and, yeah, speak to parents,
yeah,
at the end of the school day.
Yeah.
But then coming back to Luna, just around how the fact that she had to really test and figure out what channels is going to prove to be most effective. And for her, like, TikTok proved to be super valuable. It's also a lesson in the fact that you do have to try, test different methods.
Try.
Of going,
experiment,
out to market, figuring out what works. And not being afraid to try different things.
And also to kill what's not working.
Exactly, because oftentimes I think a lot of founders can be pressed or set on a particular way in which, yeah, they think it should, yeah, go to market. And sometimes it takes too long before they realize, actually, this is not working, let's something else.
I'm remembering Sade's episode, because Aze, if there's one thing that I do well, is that I kill things, yeah, when it's not working. That is such a skill.
It's a superpower.
Because you're so attached, yeah, to your idea. Be flexible.
Yeah.
You have to be flexible.
Again, spending time with customers.
Yes.
Understanding what's resonating with them and what's not. And the beauty of spending time with customers in those early days is you get feedback so quickly. As the company grows and scales, you're no longer going to be able to spend time with those 5 customers and really just spend one-on-one time with them and understand what they love. In those early days, you should really be optimizing for the 5, the 10 customers that, yeah, love your product versus their thousands. You,
yeah,
should just get that feedback and iterate.
The episode from Max, mm-hmm, where he was chatting with his co-founder and they had scaled to a point and he was like, move fast and break things. I was like, wait, we're already, we're getting quite large to be breaking things anyhow. If we break things, our customers will knock our door. To your point, in that early stage is when you can afford it.
Exactly.
So make,
exactly,
all the mistakes and, exactly, move quickly and rapidly iterate, and don't be afraid to hear it's not working.
Yeah.
Then maybe that's a start to, this is what will work for us.
Yeah. The key thing we can take from the go-to-market segments of all the episodes that we've done today is, in the early days, it does require extraordinary effort to,
yeah,
acquire those initial users.
And you will
and
do,
it's fragile.
Yeah, and you will do silly things. You should be doing silly,
yeah,
things that don't scale. You should be rapidly experimenting. You should be trying things. And you should be willing to kill them if they are not working.
Okay.
Just move on. Don't be that person that just spends so much time building the product and then you bring it to the customer and the customer's like,
I don't
resonate with this. This doesn't solve,
yeah,
my,
yeah,
problem.
Yeah. Another thing that I just want to highlight is the big launch.
Mm.
Oftentimes, a lot of founders do want to optimize for that big launch,
yeah,
day, but honestly speaking, it should really be seen as a journey, right? Yeah. And everything that comes up to that launch point should really be about, again, spending time with customers before you even get to that launch day. It's almost seen as like this flag post of, I'm going to build.
And then we will launch it and then everybody uses it. It's like, build it and they will come. No. Like, you would go find them, then you will build it. Yeah. Because that's been turned over its head. I also wanted us to talk about B2B business models, because I think with go-to-market, sales cycles for B2B business models is a huge one. Mm-hmm. Sabrina talked a little bit about this, even Shea as well. Mm-hmm. Because for B2B software companies, oftentimes you will need to speak with people who will take you through a procurement process. It's not fun and it takes a long time. And as a startup that doesn't have time, how do you get ahead of that? You should definitely check out episodes that dive deep into this because guests gave some really good actionable feedback to cutting those sales cycles low, because that's actually one of the reasons VCs say no. Like, it's one of the popular reasons. If the sales cycle is too long, it's just not scalable, because if you're going to do this 1,000 times, 10,000 times a year, and it takes you 6 or 7 or 8 months to try to onboard a customer, that just doesn't work. Yeah, I think that was an interesting one. The other one, don't obsess with your logo or your name or all of those stuff. Yeah. Because we ask each and every person, like, how did you come about your name? Most people have just been like, especially the second time founders, did you notice? They will just be like,
it's an afterthought almost.
Let's just figure out something that works. And if it doesn't work, we will change it. But in the meantime, let's just get it out. Because then you find people who like obsess over like everything.
It's really just about focusing on those things of value, right?
Yeah, especially on regulated markets. One comes to mind, Louis's episode with Go Henry, which is a platform for kids to manage their finances. So parents manage that. So a debit card, essentially. And it also provides like financial education for children. She did mention something about regulation. And she was like, if you're building a regulated product, if they tell you, oh, no, we can't do that in the regulations, you go ask them where. Point it out to me. Exactly.
That's
where.
That's a really good point.
It's such a good point. Yeah. Because most times we're like, oh, it's in the regulation. Where?
Exactly. And they couldn't tell her.
And the truth is, if you are building an innovative product, you're probably ahead of regulation.
Exactly. And so sometimes you have to work with the regulators.
Exactly.
Perfect example was with Vendee's.
Yes.
Like when, you know, he spoke about how he partnered with the regulators and took them on that journey of, why does this product need, how can we have regulation makes it workable for both parties,
exactly.
Right? And just being very intentional about partnering with them in the very early
stages. Yeah. I love it.
Not trying to avoid it. I think that's probably the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, try to avoid it.
Because it will catch up with you.
Yeah,
later.
It will. And you're actually in such a great position to shape it anyway as a pioneer.
And so we've seen a lot of our guests do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you haven't, you should definitely go check out the episodes. There are gems on gems, many we didn't even have the chance to touch on. So yeah, we'll see you next time.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all of our platforms at The Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us and we'll ask our guests. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.